It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Hour three of the program, Paul Perillo, Patriots Football Weekly, joining us. We said we'd invite in the people, and here we go. We've invited in the people. The Alex Smith trade is giving us another little back door to
let me guess.
Talk about the Garoppolo
this
trade.
This has come back to Garoppolo.
So Rich in Chestnut Hill wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Rich. Richard! Okay, your thoughts on the Alex Smith trade, and does it make you look at the Patriots' return and even, you know, wonder more what the hell they were doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I sort of had that feeling right from the start. As soon as they made the announcement of the trade, second-round pick, I just thought it didn't make any sense in the world. We've talked about it at length on this station with you guys, and I just don't know how you can possibly substantiate only getting a second-round pick when all of the reports were indicating they could have gotten a first-rounder if they'd done it at the draft. So, to me, it was if that was all you could get, then you hold on to him the rest of the year.
Right.
You know, I mean, I understand if it's the middle of the season and the return has dropped, well, now I hold on to him. I keep my insurance policy, and I'm content to let him walk away. Didn't make any sense, and it makes even less now when you see what Alex Smith. You know what the really thing that stuck out to me with the Alex Smith? $70 million guaranteed?
Right.
$70 million, and I like Alex Smith. I don't think he's a stiff, but $70 million for him?
And that sort of works against them going and drafting a quarterback, Maz. I mean, you're paying Alex Smith for the next 3 years. I mean, you're drafting a guy not to play for, I mean, you know, and
that probably takes them out of the quarterback draft.
Look,
absolutely.
I like to develop a quarterback like that. Like, I like having a guy on the bench for a year or two before he comes in. But, you know, if you're going to devote first-round pick and the kid's ready and now he can't play because you got Alex Smith, you know, I think this is their plan at quarterback. Alex Smith?
Yeah. Okay, so again, long-term, I think that's wrong. I mean, you know, what do you want me to tell you? But the other thing is, again, they can still draft a guy, okay? Where are you going to get a quarterback? Someone just going to give one to you? Like, you know, you're sort of stuck if you're them. Where you still have to draft one if they're smart. They should not ignore that. But if they don't have Alex Smith and Cousins leave, who's playing? Colt McCoy?
All right, fair point. Jimmy in Manchester, what do you got for us on the Patriots?
Hey, guys. So four of the, you know, first four drives of the Jacksonville game, Brady was sacked two of those times. Missing Marcus Kane, and how do you guys think that's going to affect him? He's just, you know, he's a right tackle. He's not on the left side. I think personally it'll be a closer game. Just want to hear you guys' thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. Paul?
Yeah, I mean, Cannon's been out half the season at this point, and to be honest with you, I don't think he played all that well when he was in. And some people have indicated that the injury that ended up putting him on IR was something that was really bothering him all year. That may be true, but I don't think he played great. I actually think Adrian Waddle has played really well when he's been the guy. The problem is he got hurt.
Right, you're
and
in
Cameron,
your third.
And Cameron Fleming has been in there too. And now I don't really know which one of those guys they're going to go with, because there have been times that Waddle has been active and healthy, and they've still gone with Fleming. I feel like Waddle is the better guy. I don't think there's a huge difference there. Definitely a concern, though. I mean, I don't worry as much about the edges with Brady. If Philadelphia is going to win this game because they get pressure, it's going to be up the middle. And we talked about Fletcher Cox already, but that's where I think they might be vulnerable, is with Tooney and Andrews in the middle there, Shaq Mason. That's the, you know, you want to talk about blueprints or whatever, that's what the Giants did. That's what teams that have caused them problems do. They get it up the middle and he can't escape.
I mean, even if the Patriots are fully healthy on the offensive line, that's still a win for Philly.
That still would be my concern. Yep, I agree.
Right? It's a win for Philly either way.
Paul Perillo joining us here in the Big Y World Class Market guest chair. Paul from Patriots.com. This hour of our program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. We continue with your calls. Mike and Methuen, what do you got, Michael?
If I hear the word blueprint one more time, I'm going to vomit all over my radio. Of course, if you get pressure up the middle, it's going to disrupt any quarterback. I mean, it's the most obvious thing. The one big, and everybody keeps bringing up the Giants Super Bowls as a blueprint. The Patriots' offense is completely different than it was in 2007 and 2011. They have three healthy guys. Well, if you assume that Gronk is fully ready to go, they have three guys who can beat man coverage on any given play.
Really? And, who are the other two?
Brandon Cooks, Deion Lewis, and Rob Gronkowski.
Brandon Cooks hasn't beaten man coverage consistently all season. Go put on the New Orleans game and watch what Marshon Lattimore did to him. Watch the Miami game. Watch what Xavier Howard did to him.
Does Philadelphia have anybody like Marshon Lattimore?
Ronald Darby.
Is Darby good? You like him?
He's not great. I mentioned before, he's not Jalen Ramsey. I mean, if Cooks plays the game that he played against Jacksonville, that's a huge edge for the Patriots.
I thought he was good in that game.
Right. He was really good in that game. That's a huge edge for the Patriots if he plays like that. If he plays like he did against Tennessee, he's a non-factor.
Hey, Mike, can I ask you something? Do you think there's any game plan to beat the Patriots?
I mean, yes, of course, and I think it has more to do with Philadelphia's offense than their defense. I think
I agree with you on that.
A complementary role. What the thing that really scares me about Philadelphia is that Ertz can really haunt them, I think, all game, and they can do a lot of that lateral stuff that Jacksonville is doing early on in the game, and they could run 90 to 100 different plays out of that offense, and they can bleed them out with a million paper cuts.
All right, Mike. I agree with Mike on that. If Philadelphia is going to do it, it's going to be because their offense plays well, and it's the complement to it. You know, what are you saying now, Ness? Balance and deep.
So, but the defensive game plan against Brady is not all that obvious because there's quarterbacks who you want to pressure on the edges.
Right.
Brady's a quarterback you want to pressure up the middle. You want to get Brady off your spot. There's other quarterbacks you want to keep on the spot. You want to keep Ben Roethlisberger on there and make him throw from the pocket.
Right. He asked, you know, what quarterback? Well, Russell Wilson is able to get outside. Aaron Rodgers is able to get outside the pocket and be just as effective. Tom Brady is not.
Right.
Tom Brady steps and climbs in the pocket, and that's when he's more effective, when he's able to climb in the pocket and make plays. So there's different guys have different strengths.
Here's Max in the truck. Go ahead, Max.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I like how the Patriots are wearing their white jerseys over the blue ones.
I just think
they play better in the white jerseys. And another quick point, Tony Maserati, you are pathetic for rooting for the Eagles. The Patriots are going to mop the floor against the Eagles. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah, so I didn't say I was rooting for the Eagles. I said that I picked the Eagles. I think the Eagles are going to win the game.
So, how dare you have independent thoughts.
I know. It goes against everything that everyone wants to believe.
That is pathetic. I do it.
How dare you?
So this must be why they didn't invite me to the rally, I guess, huh? It's probably they'd rather have Zoe and Sosie there.
And Wiggy.
And Wiggy.
Don't forget Wiggy.
Yes, don't forget Wiggy. I'm wondering.
Are you upset that you weren't invited to the rally?
No. God, I couldn't care less. Please. I hate rallies and parades. You do those on your own time.
What did you like?
Not much. Really. But I didn't see, you know, now that I think about it, I never actually saw any video of the rally with Sosie on Zoe's shoulders.
The white jerseys, I hate, Paul. If I'm a Patriots fan, I hate the white jersey. It's overthinking it. You're the Patriots. You don't need to, you know, pick a jersey color for superstition.
I hate agreeing with you. I do. I hate it. Why are we picking white?
What?
When was the last time they picked white?
When
Brady got hurt.
The first game of 2008.
Is it literally that far
back? I believe it's the last time they had a choice and went with white.
Oh, so you're saying the other because they did.
You only have a choice if you're the home team.
Right.
I cannot recall them wearing white at home other than that game.
We had a caller said that they wore white to get Dallas to wear blue in a game in 2011. I don't remember it.
Yeah, he might be right. I thought they wore the silver uniforms that day, but he might be right.
Okay, but
he might be right.
But either way.
And by the way, they needed a touchdown in like the last 20 seconds to pull that game out.
Why is it even a thought? You're the Patriots, man. You're better than this team. You should win the game.
Don't we roll out there and just roll the balls on the field and say we're the better team?
You don't need the jersey.
I like the white jersey. They're 3-0 under Belichick and Brady with the white jersey in the Super Bowl. This is the right call.
Blue. Yeah. Blue is so much better than white.
I don't think there's. It's not out of the realm of possibility that this stadium, maybe the blue jerseys get lost in the wash with all the purple in the background somehow. And Bill said, you know what, we're going with the white. It'll be easier for Tom to see his weapons.
Okay. We get
boo,
back to-
Jim. Boo.
Felger and Maz, the Sports Hub. Felger and Maz are on your phone with the radio.com app.
Get off the internet!
From 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Is there dysfunction in the organization now?
No. No.
There's no dysfunction.
No, wait.
Zero.
You have tension. I think tension, a certain amount of tension, helps make great things happen.
Dysfunction is when people take energy and use it to think about how to undermine other people. That does not happen. If it happens in this organization, I haven't seen it.
You know, the whole Alex Guerrero thing, like players not knowing which trainer to go to and having to remove him from the, you know, that was a little sticky.
Yeah, and I get Jonathan's point there. He's talking about if it's true dysfunction, there's time and energy being used to try to undermine the success of the team. And I think we're probably all in agreement that it never got to that point.
No.
That Brady is worried about, well, I'm going to lose the game to show him that I'm right. I don't think it got to that kind of a level. But I think we talked about this, too, when that Wickersham story originally came out. I think that he sensationalized it, and he made it overly dramatic. And I think in doing so, he allowed Patriots fans to pick at things as being wrong and then dismiss the whole story. There was a lot of fact, I think, that was really the underpinning of that story. I think there was a lot. The rift itself, I think, is legitimate. I think Robert Kraft all but admitted that with, was it with Willie?
Yeah.
Before the AFC Championship game, talking about, you know, this is what happens in business. This is what happens in relationships. And you have to put your egos aside. Well, and I think that's what had to happen.
So I know you brought this up earlier, Mike, but let me ask this question. Alex Guerrero undermining the regular medical staff. Isn't right. that dysfunction?
A little bit, yeah.
By Jonathan's definition, isn't that dysfunction?
But is that like trying to undermine them so that they lose? Like not everybody's got the same goal. Like I think that, and again, I think that what I think that's the crux of why Bill Belichick was unhappy with the situation is because it was contradicting what his medical staff, his training staff was working. I think there was a contradiction there, and I think that's what caused the rift with Belichick. Just my speculation, but that's my feeling. But I don't think it necessarily was the Patriots training staff wanting to do this way so we could win, and then Alex Guerrero wanting to do it this way and not caring if they won. I think everybody had the same goal. They just had different ways of trying to get there.
Yeah, I just think if you start undermining coworkers, that's how you want to call them, that's dysfunction.
Yeah, and I think that's what Bill probably viewed it as too. Well, you know, we have too many messages here. We got to keep everybody on point. And I think there were times this year that there were probably too many different messages being received.
And the other thing is, you know, when you say there's no dysfunction right now, well, that doesn't mean it didn't exist at some point.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, at some point, most places have some level of dysfunction, some level of it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't last.
And it doesn't have to...
Prolonged dysfunction.
It doesn't have to knock the whole thing down either. I think Tony's right. I think people look at it and they say, well, they're still winning, so that story was a bunch of nonsense. No. I mean, they're winning because Belichick and Brady happen to be the best, arguably, in history at what they do. So they're able to overcome it. Most teams wouldn't have been able to overcome that kind of dysfunction.
We continue with your phone calls. I'm Paul Perillo here on Radio Row. This hour of the program brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Mike in Danvers. What do you got, Michael? Michael?
Yeah, hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I wanted to say I watched the Seattle game in the Super Bowl last night. And, you know, I kind of equate that Seattle team to this Philly team, all right? And where you got Michael Bennett, you know, and then they got Fletcher Cox, all right? And so they're similar in that way. I have to tell you, though, watching the whole first half of that game last night, they didn't touch Brady. The only time they got to Brady is when he threw the interception. That was the only time. But they didn't get anywhere near Brady, and it was a lot of dinks and dunks, little screenplays, quick passes. The ball was coming out of Brady's hand in less than 2 seconds. So right. I see them kind of doing the same
thing. But they also didn't score.
I'm sorry?
But they also weren't scoring.
Right.
I mean, they scored 14 points in the last 8 minutes of the game.
Right. But I'm just saying, if you know, Fletcher Cox is the big guy here that we're worried about, well,
no, not for what you're talking about.
The same way he did Michael Bennett in that Seattle game. So I just wanted you guys' opinion.
Yeah, Michael Bennett is more of an edge guy and a pass rusher. Fletcher Cox, I think he had 5 sacks. He's not going to be a guy. He's an interior guy that's special because he has a speed and power element to him, kind of like Aaron Donald from the Rams. And he can disrupt that way, but he's not going to be a guy that you're going to sit there and say, "Well, he had 3.5 sacks." And I mean, I don't think he's going to be that kind of a guy.
This caller's acting like they neutralized Michael Bennett. My memory of the game is that Bennett was in Brady's kitchen the entire night.
He was a force.
Bennett was dominant. Now the pass rush itself—it wasn't just rushing the passer. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't do a lot of the things that they wanted to do. And the caller's right. It was a lot of short, quick passes to Shane Vereen. Right. That's what
Edelman.
They do. But they didn't score. Like, so you can sit there and say they didn't get a lot of pressure on Brady, and maybe they did. I don't remember exactly what the numbers were for pressure in that game, but whatever Seattle did for 3.5 quarters worked. Now, the Patriots are great. You got to kill them, right? How many times have we said it? You have to kill them. I think that might be the most amazing thing for Brady, though. These 4 comeback wins in the playoffs down 10 points.
They're 4-0 in their last 4 games being down 10 points in the playoffs.
That to me is, I think, all the most for anybody else is 1.
Oh, is that right?
Down 2 scores that late in the playoff game, 1, and he's done it 4 times.
Look,
that
I
to me is amazing.
I disagree with the caller that it's like, see, Seattle's defense was awesome. I mean, they were, you know, there was talent all over the
field.
They
certainly don't have the secondary. The Eagles don't have.
But I would also say that if you want to say, okay, well, the Patriots also were better then than they are now, that if it's apples to apples, that similar type of matchup, but two lesser teams, who's the Edelman in this game? Amendola, I guess.
But Amendola was Amendola in that game. So,
the point is, I think against that kind of defense, if that's what you're talking about, if you want to make that analogy, you need Edelman. He's running sideways there. The quickness is a factor. And so I'm worried about their receiving core other than Gronk, because if Philly wants to man up and slap him around, I don't think the Patriots pass catchers are as good as they've been in other years.
Here's Mike up in New Hampshire. Hi, Michael.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, Mike.
So I'm not too concerned about the Pats putting up points. Brady's going to get his points. I'm more concerned about the defense stopping Philly's offense. We saw last week how Jacksonville, you know, the backside of the backfield were ripping off chunk games on, you know, little screen passes, little dink and dunk. That's my main concern.
Okay, Pip, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people talk about that Corey Grant play. Like, that was, like, a huge element of the game. I think that was his only catch. Hmm. I thought that Jacksonville had an excellent game plan.
Grant had three catches, I think.
Did he have three? Yeah. I thought they had an excellent game plan coming in that more or less involved throwing the ball on early downs, not letting it get to third and eight like they did the whole fourth quarter.
Until they got to the fourth quarter.
They did the whole fourth quarter. So that would worry me is if a team comes out and has a smart game plan, and that's one thing that Tony talked about with Peterson, you know, all these people, and I don't know a tremendous amount about him, and what I do know of him is not good from that Kansas City playoff game, to be honest with you. But people tell me, people that I respect tell me he's one of the more innovative play callers. He's very game plan oriented. It's not a do what we do kind of guy, so it could be a totally different thing. He's willing to adapt. I'll reserve judgment. I'll watch and see what he does. But if they come out with a smart game plan, I think you can move the ball on the Patriots defense. I still like my chances with Brady, but, you know, it would be a different kind of a game then.
I think Ajayi, Clement, and Ertz are big people in this game. Those guys have to catch balls if Philly's going to win.
The Anthony in Medford thought of the day comes your way now. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Michael. Yeah, Michael, I think we'll all agree this is the worst defense that the Patriots ever came to the Super Bowl with. But that call is saying you can't compare the Seattle to the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles had a secondary linebackers that could cover. I mean, their front seven, the defensive line of the Eagles is unbelievable. And if the offensive line can give Bray time to get rid of the short passing route to the backs and the receivers, they can outscore. I can't see, I understand what Tony said. Top to bottom, the Eagles probably have a better roster. But I'm asking Tony a question. Do you think if Brady has a real good game that Foles and the Eagles can outscore the Patriots, Tony?
Okay. Quickly.
I don't know. I'm putting my money on Brady, I guess, in that situation. But I do think that Peterson's going to scheme it.
Paul, we're going to say goodbye to you.
That's okay.
Because we're bringing another guest right now.
I get it when the big time is right.
Big time. All right, Paul.
The little guy's got to go.
That's it.
All right. Good to see you guys.
So that's Paul Perillo in the Big Wide World Class Market guest chair. Now we're going to be joined by Stephen A. Smith in the Big Wide World Class Market guest chair. Stephen A., obviously, ESPN. Get to hear him spar with Max Kellerman every day, also on the radio in the midday on ESPN Radio. So he's taking a seat here from the food court at the mall. Stephen A., how you doing, man? Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it. I'm going to put your headset on. Stand by.
You're chewing something, having a little lunch or something.
Something like that. Sure. Get it while you can.
How you doing, Stephen?
I'm good, all right. How y'all doing, man?
Good.
Everything all right?
You enjoying your week?
I'm cold, man. I'm cold. I'm going to suffer. In Minneapolis.
So does Philly have any chance of winning this game?
Yes, they do. If you can pressure four without drop seven back in the coverage, and you don't have to send the house to get to Tom Brady, that seems to be the Patriots' kryptonite, particularly in games like this, which the Giants obviously displayed on not one but two occasions. Is it a long shot that that'll happen? Not as long as people think, but I still think it's a long shot. But in the end, Fletcher Cox, Graham, Chris Long, Curry, and those boys, they can't be underestimated. It's just hard to believe that you give Bill Belichick 2 weeks to prepare and he's not going to be ready. So New England definitely should be the favorites. But nevertheless, Philadelphia is not to be underestimated. My biggest reason for having the Patriots as the favorite is because I just can't believe that Bill Belichick has 2 weeks to prepare and he's going to let Nick Foles beat him. I just can't believe it. I mean, I got to see it to believe it. Nick Foles. Now, Carson Wentz, I would tell y'all, y'all about to lose this thing. Y'all about to lose Super Bowl 52. But Nick Foles, I got to see it to believe it, man.
You don't think Peterson can scheme it?
Sure, I mean, he can, but he's going against Bill Belichick. So I don't know. Listen. You guys know better than me. You guys watch this team and you cover this team religiously. But the greatness of Bill Belichick, I don't believe can be denied. And the lack of greatness on the part of Nick Foles up until 2 weeks ago, I think can be validated. And so the combination of those two things, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, am I supposed to believe that Nick Foles going up against Bill Belichick, with Bill Belichick having 2 weeks to prepare, is going to be able to get it done? I can't be sold on that. I just can't do it.
Stephen A., Is this a good matchup? Is this a good matchup for the league?
Yes, it is. It is.
Do you like the matchup? Do you like the game? Do you like this?
I like the matchup. I would like it, obviously, exponentially more if they had Carson Wentz.
Oh, so true.
There's no doubt. I mean, I would. You know, that's really what – that's the only thing that messes us up. But it does help that Nick Foles has completed about 70% of his passes throughout the playoffs. But it does help that he's looked good, because now you at least find yourself saying, damn, maybe, just maybe, he pulled this thing up. If this guy plays like this again, it could be a problem.
But from a national interest standpoint, yeah, is it good or bad that the Patriots are back here? Is there Patriots fatigue out there?
Not for me. Not for me. If you're the best, you're the best. Now, you've got folks that's going to call up and folks that are religiously focused on the Patriots, and they cheated and deflategate and spygated. And look at the AFC Championship games. How many calls did they get away with? I'm like, oh, stop it. I don't want to hear it. Look, I'm a native New Yorker. I don't root for anything Boston. New York, Boston, you know how that goes. I'm a diehard Yankee fan. But damn it, when the Red Sox came back from 3-0 and beat them, I had to eat that, okay? And if I'm looking at the New England Patriots, I'm saying, well, damn, I said this on many occasions, I'm going to say it again. If you're convinced that the New England Patriots are cheating, here's my problem. Why the hell haven't you learned how to cheat like that? Why haven't you figured that out? I mean, they've only been doing, according to you, they've only been doing it since 2001. We are now in 2018. Tom Brady has never, ever, ever won less than 9 games in a season. And most of the time it's been 10 and above. How many AFC Championship games have they been to? They've now been to 8 Super Bowls. I mean, excuse me. How have you not learned how to cheat like that? Because let me tell you something. If that's cheating, it gets to a point where, damn it, I'm admiring it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the excuses. Do I believe they're cheating? No. I believe that they are better than everybody else. They've done it better than everybody else. And I have to relent to that. I have to concede that. That's just the way it is.
Stephen A., so you tell me, is that run of success about the Patriots or about the league?
I think it's a combination of both. Belichick, listen,
don't you think the league is down?
The league is down this year.
Yeah.
The league is down this year. But you know what? You got to remember the whole Colin Kaepernick stuff and the fact that revenue and ratings were affected. And we get all of that. And then, but guess what? We were still caught up in Deshaun Watson when he came on the scene. We were watching Carson Wentz. He came on the scene. Drew Brees still reminded us what he could do. Big Ben was reminding us what he could do. Brady was still here. So you still had the game itself. But then when Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz went down, you said, oh, damn. Andrew Luck, he can't get healthy. I haven't seen him on Aaron Rodgers. Oh, man. Aaron Rodgers, don't get me started with that bad man. You know how depressed I was that he was gone. I was in depression for a few days because I loved that man so much. But I'm just saying, those are things that come with the game. They weren't gone, you know, for a different reason. I think one of the things that hurt the league, the whole Ezekiel Elliott thing, I thought that dominated the headlines more so than the quarterbacks who got injured. We kept talking about it and talking about it. And, you know, and it's just unfortunate that had to be the case. That combined with the protest and how ultimately I believe it was hijacked by the president. And it made football into something about something other than football. That's why when the new stuff came out and the NFL had decided to go against the ad, not running the ads with, you know, honoring the soldiers and what have you, and they said they didn't want to be in that game, yeah, people that were in an uproar about it. I had no problem with it. I said, this is the NFL saying, look, we tried to be tolerant, we tried to be progressive, we tried to be all of these different things, but guess what? Our bottom line is being compromised. The audience out there is telling us, damn it, we want our football. And I have no problem with it. They have every right as a business to say, we want to get back to football, and this is what they will focus on.
I just don't think the quality of the play in the league this year was as good as it usually is.
Okay.
That's all. I mean, it was good. And listen, I'm watching like everybody else, but How many really good teams are there in the league?
Well, let me ask you. Let me reflect on that and ask you this question in response. Is that because of the players and the teams, or is it because of all of these damn league rules?
Coaches.
Everything's got to be, you know what, everything got to be reviewed. It's got to take minutes upon minutes at a time to go through reviews. And, you know, ticky-tack stuff that used to transpire now suddenly is getting called. And, you know, guys are getting penalized, and they scared that money's going to come out of their pocket a week from now once stuff is reviewed over the weekend and all of this other stuff. To me, we can point to the coaches. You might have a good point there. But we also have to point to just the invasive tactics on the part of the league.
Too many rules.
Too many rules. We got to point to that as well, because you got cats that just want to play. Now, listen, let me tell you something, a quick story. I'm working at ESPN. You got a lot of guys that have played the game of football that have come walking through there, obviously working. Some of these guys got a tough time just walking and stuff like that, as you can imagine, because the game is so violent. You got a league. You can shatter a dude's leg. No problem, legal hit. You can go low for no reason. No problem. It's fine. But if you go anywhere near, I mean, I saw a guy get his neck snapped. He got hit straight in the chest, and he ended up getting fined because they tried to call it a headshot. You can't, when you mess with the game like that, you're discouraging the guys from focusing on just playing football because they're worried about the invasiveness of the league and how it's ultimately going to affect their bottom line.
Stephen A., we only have a couple more minutes left. I got to ask you this.
Sure.
Who comes out of the Eastern Conference in the NBA?
I was going to ask the same question.
I got to tell y'all this, man. I'm going to say Cleveland for now because LeBron is just so great.
You're still not buying? Why are the national folks not buying on the Celtics?
You can't say we're not buying it, because I'm telling you right now, I'm looking at the Boston Celtics. Let me tell you something right now.
Every
Boston's
time I hear
special.
Van Gundy call a basketball game, every time I hear Van Gundy call a Celtics game, he's like,
You're being emotional. Listen, the fact of the matter is this. I was there in Cleveland when Gordon Hayward went down. I was right on the baseline, just 10 feet away. It was the nastiest injury I ever seen in all my years of covering the NBA. I felt so bad for that guy. First game, my God, first quarter. It was just sad. But as I watched this team, if Gordon Hayward were healthy, Boston would be going to the finals.
Okay, but then
Kyrie is special. Listen, Jaylen Brown, this is why I'm telling you being a bit emotional. Jaylen Brown's a bad boy. Jason Tatum could be rookie of the year. Kyrie is a superstar, okay? I like the parts that y'all have. What's your problem?
And Cleveland's a mess.
Listen, Cleveland's a mess, true, but come playoff time, you got a 6'8", 260-pound Goliath coming your way who's incredibly experienced against a Kyrie who is big time, no doubt, but he's still 6'1". And you got to think about that.
How much blame does Isaiah get for the mess that, you know, that seems like
minimal. And here's why. First of all, he didn't want to be there. The man wishes he was in Boston. His heart was broken when he got traded. Secondly, when he went there, you had defensive problems before he ever arrived. Thirdly, you knew what you were getting because he's a ball-dominant guy who has a perimeter game, who can get to the hole, can do a lot of things, particularly in the fourth quarter. He was the number one option in Boston. Now everybody is secondary
to
LeBron.
That's number one. That's number one on the list. He and LeBron can't coexist.
Well, you could say that, but I can tell you this. LeBron has created a mess in Boston in the sense that you're bickering with Dan Gilbert because Dan Gilbert wanted you to re-up. Since you didn't re-up, he decides he's not going to do anything to improve the team. You know, you got that going on. You bring in D-Wade. After ingratiating yourself with the players to the point where you got J.R. Smith getting up at 7:30 in the morning to work out in the offseason, getting himself ready because you're telling him he's your best perimeter defender and how you need him. And the second you got Dwayne Wade, you shoved everybody else to the side because your relationship with Dwayne Wade is so tight. You had all of these different things going on. You got Tristan Thompson. He's with a Kardashian, not to mention the fact that he's a reserve trying to learn how to be a reserve. You got Isaiah Thomas with his issues. You got Kevin Love caught up in the mix, being surrounded with mess he don't want to be around, okay? You got D-Wade that had to come off the bench, had to literally go to the coach and say, I'll come off the bench, because it was affecting J.R. Smith emotionally. Look at all of that. I have a recurring role on General Hospital. I'm friends with Eric Braden, who plays Victor Newman on Young and the Restless, and I'm telling you right now, the Cleveland Cavaliers this year have both those soap operas beat with all the nonsense that's going on with them. Of course, it's not Isaiah Thomas, but being thrown in the mix to all of that stuff, there's so much one man can take, man.
Stephen A., thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Have a good week, man.
You do the same.
Okay. Stephen.
All right, buddy.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like football, and I like the Patriots and all of that.
Hold on, I'm not done.
This is Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, Patriots fans, are you still struggling to find reasons to hate the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yeah!
Well, struggle no more, because Felger and Maz have got you covered.
Learning to hate them, learning to hate the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, you know I hate the Eagles.
Why, bro?
Because they're pro-animal abuse.
Get the f*** out of here.
No, it's true, bro. Their loser fans punch not one, but two police horses. And that's even after they won a game.
That ain't right. Horses are beautiful, kid.
And then you got Carson Wentz. Every picture on his Instagram is of him hunting and killing beautiful creatures.
Yeah, well, no wonder Wentz and Foles like wounded ducks.
Good one. I get it.
Yeah, abusing animals and the Eagles.
No real general theme of the show. Just I think the Alex Smith trade, interesting sort of jumping off point. Just brought us back to the Guerrero trade a little bit. And Kraft's had some comments with Andrea Kramer that sort of tie in as well to the goings on with the Patriots this year. So that's been one thing that we've been hitting on. Otherwise, it's pretty much the game. Let's go back to it here. Here's Devin and Lynn. Go ahead, Devin. What do you got?
Hi. First of all, I'm kind of disappointed you guys didn't ask Stephen A. Smith about Carlton Norwell. I thought that would have been
just. I was just saying that off the air to these guys.
We were discussing. I forgot.
I was hoping Jimmy would talk to him in that his fake Carlton Norwell voice. All right.
Well, the time was limited. I wasn't going to bark.
Stephen, what can you tell us about Carlton in Massachusetts?
Mike, I hear you keep talking about how you think Bill did Garoppolo a favor and maybe kind of did it for his legacy to help Jimmy get to a better team. But what does it have to do maybe about also having the same agent as Tom Brady? You know, he works with Tom Yee on a regular basis, you know, helping Tom get better contracts, taking smaller contracts for the team, helping out the team. Maybe this was something that he did to kind of help out Tom Yee, saying, hey, don't send Jimmy Garoppolo to Siberia of Cleveland. Send him somewhere good because I've been helping you out.
No. I think that's entirely possible, Devin, but that's not in the best interest of the team. So he's now in the business of taking care of an agent or making a player happy that he trades? Since when?
I mean, when you really weigh that out, think of how unconscionable that is. Really. To sit there and say, I have an asset. I am the coach of a team and the director of all personnel. I am that guy. I have an asset that has great value. But if I send him to that place, the player's going to suffer, and I really like him. So you know what? I'm going to send him somewhere else and take less.
I'm sorry. That is...
It is. It's unconscionable.
It's negligent.
It is. It's unconscionable.
You could be sitting here with the fourth overall pick. I mean, and they just didn't want to pick up the phone with Cleveland, which is, to me, again, unconscionable, as you said.
So now again... Me, I didn't want them to trade Garoppolo at all, okay? But once you come to that conclusion that that's what you're going to do, you are obligated to get the best deal.
Pick up the phone?
Now, if it's someone in the division, well, then there are other factors, okay? We believe in this guy. We think if we send him there, that's going to threaten our place in the division. Fine, I get it. But beyond that kind of logic, you get the best return.
I'm the agent. The agent was a real big factor in this, you know, and I don't know if we've given it enough consideration. It's a major Don. If you wanted to keep Garoppolo on a bridge deal, like that would have been better than a franchise tag, right? Like a 2-year deal that gives him some money but bridges it to Brady. Like that's ultimately what you would want if you're the Patriots. There was no way Don Yee was going to give that because then Brady fires him. Brady wanted the kid out of here, so Don Yee is going to make a contract between the team and Garoppolo to keep Garoppolo here? No way!
Massive obstacle.
No way! Huge conflict of interest. It was not in Don Yee's best interest to sign Garoppolo here on a bridge deal or anything that upset Tom. Tom wanted the kid gone.
Brady's his meal ticket. He's got to take care of Brady.
So, that's just, people brought it up. It's been mentioned, but I thought it was a real big factor.
Especially, who was it that reported that Garoppolo was actually amenable to the bridge deal and wanted to do it and Yee wouldn't let him?
And why? Because Yee knew that Brady would can him if he helped facilitate Garoppolo being the next guy. He couldn't do it. Matt in Framingham. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, how you doing? Tony, I actually like the self-proclaimed Tony Maz is worried. I actually like that. But earlier when you said to the Philadelphian over there that Rocky Balboa would be, you know, their fictional hero, would be a better Saturday speaker than Brett Favre. Or a.k.a. Brett Favre, you know, what's he going to tell them? How to beat the Pats in 96 with the tuna?
Right.
Or how to hide in the woods after they get embarrassed on Sunday? I don't understand. And as far as the trade, do you know that the Browns actually offered the Chiefs the 33rd pick which would have been better than what we got for Alex Smith. So that just shows how bad of a deal we made with Jimmy Garoppolo. But also on that trade, Andy Reid set an example of how to pants another team and make a quarterback transition by not only dumping an aging quarterback who the Redskins now have until the age of 36, but getting a promising corner, a third-round pick, freeing up Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of cap space.
Yeah, no, Casey did well with the deal. That's a good deal for them. The one thing I wanted to hit on that he mentioned there was...
They did. They nailed it across the board. They already had the guy in waiting.
Well, he had so much stuff. What was the one?
Favre going in.
Oh, Favre. So, in case, if you haven't heard about this, folks, Doug Peterson, the coach in Philly, his bright idea, his big Saturday night speaker that he's bringing in to address the team is Brett Favre, which I think is just so absurd.
What's he have anything to do with Philadelphia Eagles? I know he's buddies with Peterson, but please.
I mean, look, he was a really entertaining player to watch in his day. Fun player. And a great quarterback and a Hall of Famer. But would you say that Brett Favre was a great winner?
No.
Yeah, he wasn't. I mean, they went to the playoffs every year, but he wasn't one of these guys, you know?
He only won one, right?
He only won one. And all that talent and, you know, all the talent he had, screwing around half the time, like he played like an irresponsible jackass for the whole second half of his career. He was not really dedicated to his craft until the very end when he wanted to stick it to the Packers, and he had that one great year with Minnesota. How did he do that
but
at 40?
Even still, you could set a watch to that terrible pick that was going to cost the team the game.
Even still, he throws an interception in overtime of the NFC Championship game. This is what I remember Brett Favre for. The back-breaking, franchise-killing interception, more than the game-winning play. He had more screw-ups in big games than winning plays in big games. And that's the guy talking to your team. He has nothing to do with Philadelphia. He has nothing to do with the Eagles. He's not a decorated champion. He won one. He played forever, and he won one. He's from Mississippi and played in Green Bay. Like, what?
But I am here to promote the Microtouch Tough Blade, fellas. And if you shave with the Microtouch Tough Blade, you might be able to beat the Patriots tomorrow. Who wants to buy him?
In the copper sleeve.
Yeah.
Like what Eagle is saying? They're going, oh, Brett, what does Brett have to say? Have you ever in your life said, I wonder what Brett has to say? Never! So it's just another little, and I don't know, it's just a little thing.
I'll tell you though, when you really start to think about it, like...
I mean, Belichick brings in Bill Russell.
Right.
Or Bill has done in previous Super Bowls, he's brought in Lenny Clark, you know, for...
Keep everybody for a whole different reason,
you know? But he's just going to randomly bring in, you know, some quarterback who played on another team a decade ago. What? Why?
There had to be somebody in Philadelphia history that meant more. You know, Bobby Clark, something like that. Like, I'm just picking names out of my head now. But if you're thinking about... I guess he really didn't have many Eagles to pick when you think...
Yeah, really? What do you do with that loser organization?
Like, Reggie White, maybe?
He's dead.
Oh, right.
Cross him off the list.
Yeah. I forgot about Reggie White.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.